Doug.
There's nowhere I wouldn't go to help someone customize and save on car insurance with Liberty Mutual, even if it means sitting front row at a comedy show.
Hey, everyone, check out this guy and his bird. What is this, your first date?
Oh, no. We help people customize and save on car insurance with Liberty Mutual together. We're married. Me to a human, him to a bird.
Yeah, the bird looks out of your league anyways.
Get a quote at libertymutual.com or with your local agent.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast, bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Greetings, listeners. I'm Eric Peabody, and this is the Horror Hill Podcast. After last week's stories focused on fun springtime activities, I think we'll be staying closer to home today. Maybe take a nice relaxing nap, maybe sit outside and play some cards. After all, nothing bad ever happens at home, right? Well, tonight's author, Robert J. Bradshaw, has a couple of stories for us to counter that argument. We'll start with The Treatment Plant, where a couple of good old boys relaxing in the yard after a hard day's work decide to investigate a strange alarm sound echoing across the countryside. Then, in What Slithers in the Wires, we join a young child who is desperate to get his mother to believe him about the odd shapes and sounds that have been permeating his life. Regardless, I think good old Robert might just be stringing us along. In fact, I'll go on record right now and say that even though this is a horror podcast and we have two horror stories written by a horror author, I'm positive that nothing will go wrong. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Robert J. Bradshaw, I give you The Treatment Plant. The siren rang loud and true. It echoed off the road and the chain-link fence, sailed past the bark of the trees and the greens of the bush, soared through the rippling stream and the snapped twigs on the forest floor. The siren rang across the 5-acre field and up to the glass table where two men were sitting. They didn't hear it at first, as the hot summer afternoon baked down on them. Beer bottles littered the table, and Noah Taylor swatted away a pair of mosquitoes. Brent Stilson looked down at his cards. Not a single hand he could make higher than two pair. A sunburn was forming on his forehead, and a pink rose color had taken to his cheeks. Noah heard the peculiar noise off in the distance and raised his head. "Shh, you hear that?" he asked as he put his cards face down on the table. Brent perked up his ears, the low hum of the siren creeping across the fields of the property. "Yeah, I do," he said after a moment. The sun and beer had made him sluggish. Noah removed his ball cap and ran an oily hand through his greasy brown hair. "Sounds like it's coming from the water treatment plant, don't it?" He listened closer as the hum continued. Brent shrugged. "I guess. You would know. It's your house. There ain't no treatment factories out where I live." Noah emptied a bottle down his throat. The glass had lost most of its chill and left a small puddle around its base. "I know it's my house. That doesn't mean I know what every alarm sounds like," he muttered as he placed the empty bottle on the table, his eyes moving along the field. "Uh-huh," Brent added as he studied his cards, hoping that the harder he stared at them, the more likely he could conjure up the card he needed to form a full house. "Let's go have a look," Noah said after a moment as he stared off at the trees on the far side of his property. The wind had picked up and blew hot air around the cool green grass that rippled in the breeze. "A look at what?" Brent asked as he looked at his dwindling number of poker chips scattered around the table. "At the water treatment plant, you deaf." "I know at the water treatment plant. I'm just saying, at what? You seen one concrete building, you seen them all." Brent grabbed the bottle opener from the table and lifted the cap off a fresh beer. "I've been working on your truck all day. I'm beat. Going down the road to look at the gray slab of a building ain't my idea of fun." "It might be fun, if you lose your attitude. We'll go through the woods. It's a shortcut. 10, maybe 15 minute walk." "I just opened this beer." Brent gestured to the bottle in his hand. "Bring it with you. I'll grab one and we'll have him for the road." Brent shrugged and lowered his cards to the table. He looked over his shoulder at the woods, the low hum still filtering through. "All right, but buy me a beer when we get back." Noah leaned over and opened the small red cooler by his foot. The ice had long since melted, making a lake for the bottles to drown in. "Sure, I've been buying you beers for 10 years. What's one more?" Brent smiled a big, toothy grin and stood up, the wave of booze hitting him as he did so. The two walked off Noah's property and headed into the forest. The alarm continued to grow louder and changed from a hum to a screech. Noah didn't know these woods well enough to form a mental map, but he knew that by following the sound, they would eventually get there. "These mosquitoes are murder," Brent said from a few paces behind. Noah sipped from his beer and tried to listen to the sound of a stream that flowed in the distance. The constant alarm masked its finer details. Brent swatted at the pests as he looked up to the treetops, admiring the rays of sun that glistened through the green canopy. "I haven't been in the sticks in a long time. Pretty stuff," he added after a moment, before downing most of his beer. Noah again stayed quiet, his mind wondering what had set off the alarm. Brent turned his gaze to his friend and asked, "What do you think's the matter?" Noah shook his head as he spoke. "I was just thinking the same thing. Chemical spill, maybe. That's the only thing I can think of." Brent bit his lip and moved over to a thick, aging tree whose trunk was easily triple his size. He knelt down and placed his newly empty beer bottle in the dirt. "What you doing over there?" Noah asked, stopping to watch Brent. The alarm continued blaring in the distance. Brent stood up and brushed off his worn jeans. "I don't want to hold it no more."
"Don't leave it there," Noah snapped.
"It won't be there long. We'll come back for it."
Brent walked forward to rejoin Noah.
"You know I would never waste a perfectly good bottle."
He shook his head.
"Returning a case with a missing bottle should be a crime in this state, I reckon."
Noah looked around at the hundreds of trees and short hills that surrounded them. All the trees looked old and mighty. He appreciated Brent's optimism that they would be able to find this exact spot again on the walk back,
but he doubted it. The two men continued on and headed up a steep hill. A single boulder jutting out of the ground at half their height served as the only marker they had seen so far. As they marched to the top of the hill, the alarm reached its crescendo. The unnerving wail flooded through the low-hanging branches. Noah pointed forward as he could just make out the cream-colored concrete structure. A vine-ridden chain-link fence separated them from their destination.
"There she be," he added.
Brent thrust a finger into his ears and rotated them to stop the ringing.
"What now?"
he said, as he leaned to the right, attempting to get a better look at the buildings beyond.
"Let's head to the fence. Maybe we'll see something worth seeing,"
Noah said, as he stepped down the hill, the rotting leaves making the descent slippery. Brent watched as Noah reached the bottom of the hill and studied the fence. After a moment, Noah turned and waved him down, beckoning him to follow. Brent looked at the small section of the treatment plant he could see through the chain links. A calm, concrete slab, the sound of rushing water, and the alarm blaring. No employees scurried about, no security roaming the perimeter. Where is everyone? He thought. While he was no expert on water treatment facilities and was unsure how many people worked at one, he knew someone should be around. Someone, anyone, should be investigating the alarm.
Unless they were evacuated,
his mind said as he studied the still structure ahead. Only the alarm signaled something was amiss behind the calm veneer of the structure.
Hey, Noah?
He said as he watched his companion start to walk along the perimeter.
What?
Noah shouted as he turned. Brent rubbed his forehead. The sun seemed to be getting hotter, and the humidity surrounding the plant was causing him to sweat even more.
I think we should get going, he called down. Maybe there's a gas leak or something. I don't see no people about.
He felt the heat sobering him with every passing second. Noah didn't reply. He simply shrugged his shoulders and continued to walk along the fence line. Brent swallowed and adjusted his stained t-shirt as it clung to his back. He shook his head and headed down the hill, smelling the air as he did so. It smelled of crisp water with a soft mix of chemicals. Nothing much alarming or out of the ordinary, but still, he couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. He looked through the chain links again. Still, no one. They followed the barbed wire fence for a few minutes until they came to an area where the path had been dug under the chain links. The burrows under the fence were wide enough for them to squeeze through.
Well, Noah said, looking at Brent and then the dugout. You coming?
Brent hesitated as he looked through the fence towards the rear of the facility.
Well, I'm going. Might never get another chance,
Noah said as he got down on his knees and removed a small section of dirt to make the hole bigger.
Why ain't nobody here?
Brent asked, rubbing his forehead. His burn was beginning to bother him.
It's Saturday. Maybe that has something to do with it. Or maybe they're inside trying to turn off that goddamn alarm.
Brent didn't find either of those answers particularly pleasing.
Where are the fire engines or the helicopters? He thought. People should be investigating an alarm like this.
Noah was under the fence with a grunt and on the other side before Brent knew it. Noah looked around the complex, noting a few windows on the second story and the weeds that grew in the cracks of the concrete. He turned and headed to the right, nearing the back of the building. Brent sighed as he realized he would have to follow his companion's lead. He was the smaller of the two and wasn't concerned about getting stuck, but he was more worried about what had dug this hole and if it had anything to do with the alarm or lack of people. He scurried under the fence and pulled his shirt as it snagged on the rusted bottom. He climbed out of the rut and jogged to catch up to his companion, who was just about to turn the corner to approach the backside of the building. Noah leaned around the corner and looked across the compound. Several tanks and sets of sheds sat at the far side. A second concrete structure was also placed farther away, connected to this building by scaffolding and piping. Still, no one.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Noah stepped from around the corner and heard Brent approaching behind him, out of breath. His breathing was short and ragged. Standing out in the open sun, the heat was unbearable. A short distance away, a pipe was leaking a slow, steady stream of water. Noah again checked to ensure the coast was clear before walking towards it. Brent hesitated, but after a moment, followed behind. Noah held his hand under the leaking water. It was cool and refreshing, nearly ice cold. He brought his face closer to the clear liquid and smelled it.
"Don't drink it," Brent said as he reached out to stop Noah. "Might have chemicals or be dirty water still."
"I ain't drinking it," he replied as he looked up at the pipe. "It smells okay, though."
Noah knew his friend was right. There was no sense in risking it. Instead, he removed his ball cap and held it under the steady stream. The quick patter of water hitting the upturned hat was replaced by the liquid collecting upon itself. Noah splashed some of the water on his face before placing the hat gingerly on his head. The sudden chill upon his neck and back caused him to stiffen. It was wonderful. Brent thought of splashing some water on himself, but quickly dismissed the idea.
"I'll survive," he thought, as his mind quickly turned back to the lack of employees roaming about.
Brent turned and walked a few paces away along the back of the building. He marveled at a set of 6 large glass windows that led to the top of the structure. As he peered through the humid windows, he admired the blue tanks and the brightly colored pipes that filled the facility. A desk sat directly in front of him on the other side of the glass. The computer was old, and the paper files placed on top of the fake wood were ragged and disheveled. A cup of coffee sat next to a half-eaten sandwich. The bread and meat inside looked fresh.
"He must have evacuated," his inner voice said. He could hear the nerves in it as he thought the words.
Brent was about to turn to tell Noah that he was leaving with or without him, when his eyes caught movement on the scaffolding. High above the tanks on the second story, 2 men dressed in army fatigues and camouflage walked along the catwalks. They hoisted a barrel between them, the weight apparent by how they struggled to lift it. They upended the barrel and held it over the open tank. A purple powder tumbled out and landed in the reservoir below. The soldiers shook the container before walking away to the end of the scaffold, where 6 additional drums waited.
"Are they fixing a spill?"
Brent thought, as he watched the soldiers struggle to lift another barrel.
"Why is the army doing it?"
Brent stepped away from the glass and said,
"Hey, Noah, let's..."
He ceased speaking as he looked to where Noah was standing. A man in a United States Army uniform stood where they had just come from. Noah was frozen as he eyed this newcomer, who had seemingly appeared out of nowhere. The soldier took a step forward, his field cap hanging down, covering his face in shadow.
"What are you doing here?"
the soldier said, flexing his hand as he spoke in a distant monotone.
We heard the alarm, thought we could help,"
Noah answered. His voice trembled as he took a step back, closer to Brent.
"Alarm?"
the soldier said as he slowly looked to the sky. It was as if he were confused by Noah's use of words.
"Oh, that? Yes, well, everything's under control."
He paused and returned his gaze to the 2 trespassers. His face was dull and lacking emotion.
"A-okay, as you might say."
Brent noticed that the soldier had no rifle in his hands. What kind of an army man doesn't carry his rifle in the field? He thought, as he directed his eyes to the man's holster placed on his hip. It, too, was empty. What the hell? Brent's mind raced. Is this guy even really in the army? Where's all his gear? What's going on here? The soldier sighed after taking a deep inhale. He walked forward with steady determination.
"Let me see identification."
Noah nodded.
Yes, sir,"
he said, reaching into his beige shorts and removing his wallet. Brent clapped his chest and jeans, stepping forward as he did so. He knew his wallet was in his back pocket, but thought, I ain't showing this guy anything. Not a damned thing. Noah handed the soldier his driver's license. The man looked down at it, the same vacant expression plastered on his face, as he said, Noah Taylor, 72 Baker Street. The way he spoke, it was as if the words were foreign to him, almost like he was attempting to sound them out. The soldier looked up and held out his hand to receive Brent's identification. Brent shook his head.
Sorry, sir. I think I left it at his house.
He pointed a thumb at Noah with one hand and pretended to search his pockets once more with the other.
Hmm, I see, the guard said, his voice dismissive and oddly calm.
He raised his field cap up on his forehead, revealing piercing green eyes. Brent studied the man. There wasn't a drop of sweat on him. The heat wave was scorching, yet here was this soldier in an MP sergeant's uniform, standing like it was room temperature. His heavy pants and camouflaged long-sleeved shirt showed no signs of moisture. The sergeant handed Noah back his driver's license and stared at Brent.
Identification? He asked after a moment.
Brent looked to Noah with a confused glance before saying,
What? You just asked me that.
The soldier nodded, but uncertainty filled his face. Brent swallowed and continued.
Like I said, it's at his house.
Hmm, I see, the sergeant said, again in the same cool tone.
The guard reached into his pocket and pulled out a black strand of plastic, a zip tie.
Until I know who you...
He stopped speaking and lowered the binding to his side, looking at Noah as he spoke. He stared at him for a long while before taking several shallow breaths. Brent backed away slowly. The soldier cocked his head and looked back to Brent.
You two should run along now. Nothing to see here.
Is that all? Noah asked, his voice quaking.
Run along now, the soldier said, his voice deeper than it had been a moment before.
Without saying a word, Noah and Brent quickly walked past the soldier, who stood rigid, staring at the water tanks and the sheds beyond. As Brent passed by him, the sergeant cocked his head once more, glaring down at him with intense interest. Those green eyes shimmered, and the soldier blinked, then blinked again. It was the second flicker of the eyes that caused Brent's mouth to hang open. A sideways film had moved across the soldier's retinas. Brent swallowed and backpedaled away, following Noah as he moved towards the fence. Upon turning the corner of the building, the two men dashed towards the hole under the fence and, upon reaching it, scurried under in a flash. Brent ran beside Noah as they moved to the top of the hill. He looked back at the plant. The soldier stood at the fence line, arms at his sides, staring at them, standing perfectly still, watching. Noah pulled on Brent's shirt and said,
Come on, go!
The two ran down the hill, leaving the green-eyed guard behind on the far side of the fence. As they ran along, Brent said,
Did you see that guy? His eyes, he was like a lizard or something. When he blinked, did you see?
What are you talking about? He was just a creepy GI,
Noah replied, his voice ragged.
No, I saw it.
You're drunk, imagining things.
No, I'm seeing straight. I saw those soldiers dumping something in the water inside.
You're hallucinating. Sun must be frying your brain. I told you not to drink on an empty stomach.
Noah argued as he stopped running and put his hand out to lean on a tree. He was panting.
Shoot, I think the sun's getting to me too. It's humid in these trees. Lord, it's hot.
He wiped a lump of sweat from his forehead and removed his hat.
I think I'm getting a burn just like you. I can feel it coming.
Brent placed his hands on his knees and sucked air as he listened to Noah. He took a few shallow breaths before standing up, recognizing where they were. Brent walked over to a large old tree trunk that sat a few meters away. He picked up the beer bottle and moved back over to Noah.
But why was the army there? Why not firefighters or the health department or maybe cops? Why the army? Brent asked upon reaching Noah. Noah looked down at the bottle in Brent's hand.
What's that?
Brent lowered his eyes to the glass for a moment before saying,
I left it by the tree, remember? I didn't want to carry it anymore.
Huh. Yeah, I forgot.
Noah's voice was overconfident. He wiped his forehead again and rubbed the back of his neck.
Let's get out of here before that creep of a GI decides to come after us.
Noah began running once more. Brent gripped the beer bottle and followed suit. The alarm still blared behind them. The two men reached the end of the forest and bounded across Noah's back field. They stopped when they stumbled onto Noah's patio. Brent plopped down in a chair in front of the glass table. The poker chips still held down the cards that lay across the surface.
I'm beat,
he said, exhaling sharply as his pulse pounded in his ears. Noah rubbed his face one more time. He was as red as a lobster. The sun had been murder on his skin.
I need a drink,
he said, after licking his chapped lips.
How about that beer you owe me?
Brent said, with a smile on his face, as Noah turned to enter the house.
Nice cold beer would do us some good, I think.
Yeah,
Noah said in a deadpan tone. He opened the creaky screen door and disappeared inside the house. Brent listened to the wind in the trees and the distance. The buzz of mosquitoes flicked around the roof. He dragged a poker chip along the glass, passing it between his fingers as he waited for Noah to return with his drink. He waited a long time. The alarm ceased. Suddenly, the countryside lay silent, the sound of cicadas quickly filling the gap. Occasionally, a truck bounding down the rural highway out front of the property broke the monotony.
More military trucks?
Brent thought as he listened to the hot, dry air swirling about. Noah appeared at the screen door and opened it with a creak as he approached. In his hand was a glass of water, a single ice cube clinking around the brim. He sat down at the table and extended the glass to Brent.
How about some water? He said, his voice distant.
Brent reached for the glass, but froze, his hand hovering in the air as he noticed something peculiar about Noah's complexion.
What happened to your sunburn?
His voice shook as he studied his friend's pale skin.
I'm all better now,
Noah replied, pushing the glass across the table. Brent looked up in time to see Noah blink. A second layer of film covered his piercing green eyes.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
You've been listening to The Treatment Plant by Robert J. Bradshaw. Next, also from Robert J. Bradshaw, here's What Slithers in the Wires. Seattle, Washington, August 1987.
Well, Maggie, the boy has never been what most would call normal,
Mrs. Sagalily said as she sipped her tea, her voice carrying from the parlor and down the hall to Jeremy's room. Despite the hushed voices, Jeremy heard every word they muttered as he lay on the carpeted floor of his bedroom. The sound of clinking china echoed from the parlor, and Mrs. Sagalily continued,
I know he's your son, but...
Yes, yes he is, and I should be defending him.
Mother paused.
But you're not saying anything the doctors haven't said before.
Her voice was hoarse as she had been crying shortly before Mrs. Sagalily arrived.
He's, what, 7? He might still grow out of it. Maybe it's just from the stress. Trying to get used to a new living arrangement can't be easy at that age.
I blame myself,
Mother said, though she was quickly shushed by Mrs. Sagalily.
Jeremy pressed his ear to the cold wooden door.
No, I do,
Mother continued, her hushed voice growing louder. I had him when I was 39. On top of that, Ben leaving us last year. I shouldn't have waited so long to settle down, but my career, I put so much time into it. Now it seems that was all for nothing.
Did you take him to the psychiatrist I suggested?
Mrs. Sagalily said, trying to shift the conversation to less upsetting topics.
Yes, and he said the same thing as the first doctor. They think he'll grow out of it, but I'm not so sure.
There was a pause, and when Mother spoke again, she had hushed her voice once more.
What has me more concerned is that he starts the second grade in September, and the teacher, a real choice woman, has already gone to the principal saying that she refuses to teach him. She cites his outbursts last year as disruptive.
Mother stopped again as she suppressed the urge to cry.
I was furious at first. I still am. But who am I kidding? She's right, Julia. That awful woman's right.
Mrs. Sagalily mumbled a few consoling words before Mother spoke again.
I can't stand how she talks about my baby. But if I were the parent of one of those other children, I would have complained too.
A long pause and then a whisper, almost at the edge of Jeremy's hearing.
They call him dangerous.
Dangerous? Jeremy thought as he looked under the door and studied the small sliver of hallway that remained unobstructed by the olive green carpet. He knew what dangerous meant. Mother used it when she talked about crossing the street or when the oven was on.
Me? Dangerous? But I haven't burned anyone, and I always look both ways.
He thought as he scratched his face. The carpet fibers were starting to irritate him. Jeremy thought back to the incidents that had occurred earlier that year. At least, that's what his teacher, Mrs. Rothschild, had called them. Jeremy remembered the shapes, the ones that bumbled around in the corners of the room, always watching the children. When they first appeared, Jeremy had studied them curiously, completely ignoring the reading exercises he was expected to be listening to. They were gray, smoky images of ever-evolving silhouettes, twisting and turning in their constant motion. Once the shapes began to aggressively dart along the ceiling, though, Jeremy screamed. The next week, the shapes appeared again, bigger this time and moving more erratically. Jeremy cried out once more, but this time he was swiftly taken to the principal's office. Mother had rushed over from work, and Jeremy remembered how happy he was to see her. That was until he noticed how furious she looked. She held a smile while speaking with the principal. The car ride home, however, was anything but smiles. Jeremy had not been allowed to sit in the principal's office while they discussed the outburst.
While the big people talk,
Mother had said before sitting him on the bench in the secretary's office and closing the frosted glass door. Jeremy watched the young woman behind the stack of paperwork as she made the occasional phone call.
She smelled like cigarettes and new paper, Jeremy thought to himself as the carpet itched the back of his head, his eyes glued to the ceiling. Not like the principal. He smelled of perfume and wore a jacket with those patches on the sleeves.
Despite sitting in the room outside the office, he had been able to hear some of what the principal and Mother talked about.
Jeremy is an attention seeker and is restless. The principal's baritone voice filtered through the frosted glass.
He's six, Mother had replied. Aren't they all like that?
The principal had mumbled something, but Jeremy couldn't make it out. It didn't really matter. He already knew the answer. He knew he wasn't like the other children. They couldn't see the shapes in the corners.
Aren't you afraid he'll hear us talking about him?
Mrs. Sagalily said as her cup clanked against the saucer. Her voice was even more hushed now.
No, I put him down for his nap an hour or so ago, Mother said. He's a pretty deep sleeper, and we had a big morning at the park.
Jeremy kept replaying what she had said to him on the car ride home after the principal's office.
Those shapes aren't real, Jeremy. I'm so disappointed that you would embarrass me like that.
Jeremy stayed quiet after that and simply studied the twisting silhouettes whenever they danced about the room. No matter how aggressive they got, he didn't scream.
After a couple of days, they disappeared for a while, having seemingly grown bored by his lack of outbursts. Jeremy had thought he had won. Until the playground incident. Jeremy shuddered. That had been the worst one yet. He listened to the sounds of the kitchen outside his room as Mother poured more tea. His mind quickly retreated to the memory of the playground, a memory that haunted him. The shapes had come from the far side of the schoolyard, past the parent drop-off zone and through the fence where the bus would arrive to pick up the children. Gone were the gray, smoky images. They had been replaced with menacing black creations. The new horrors rushed the playground. Gone were their erratic and lackadaisical movements. This new breed of shapes lunged towards the playing children. Their mission was clear. Jeremy watched as the black, rippling voids got closer, moving across the grass with horrifying speed. As the shapes neared, Jeremy watched them begin to transform. The black smoke fell away like a snakeskin, leaving the true form underneath to emerge. Grotesque, slithering eels, their teeth locked on the children building in the sandpit. Jeremy screamed at the big kids to run and pointed at the approaching monsters. The children stayed put and simply stared back at him, the sand in their shovels returning to the ground on which they sat, their mouths open, a confused and disturbed expression on their small faces. Before Jeremy knew it, he was once again sitting in the principal's office. Shortly after that, he was in the nurse's office as well. He told the nurse about the shapes and how they changed. The nurse simply smiled and gave him an ice pack for his head. That weekend, Mother took him to the doctor, followed by the pharmacy immediately after. When Jeremy asked why they had to go, his mother simply said, "To pick up some happy medicine." Her eyes were red that day, too. Jeremy listened to the door once again. Mother and Mrs. Sagalily were talking about his dad. They sounded aggravated and unpleasant, as they usually did whenever he came up. Jeremy rolled onto his side and looked at his bed. "The shapes are real, and they have nothing to do with Dad leaving us," Jeremy thought as he admired his Batman blankets. "And those pills don't help. The eels are still out there. I just can't, what's the word? Prove it, that's right. I need to prove it to them." "Do you think he's just depressed?" Mother said as she swallowed, trying to stifle the oncoming tears. "He's a little young for that, don't you think?" Mrs. Sagalily asked in a less harsh tone than she had been using. Jeremy fiddled with the carpet fibers as he rolled his palm over them. He sighed. He had heard this conversation many times. Mother asked the principal, the teachers, the doctor, even Grandma, except speaking with her was more often done on the phone. The phone. He felt his skin crawl as the thought of that off-white menace sitting on the wall in their kitchen latched onto his mind. Its cord hung down like a viper. Jeremy didn't like that phone and, over the past few months, had developed a severe fear of where those corded tendrils might lead. Jeremy thought back to the night it happened, the night he heard it, and the last time he had touched a phone. Mother was talking with Grandma, and the conversation was fairly typical. That was until Jeremy overheard his mother say, "Can you please talk some sense into him?" As he took the phone from his mother and put the speaker to his ear, that's when he heard it. That gut-wrenching sound. A writhing, wet slithering that was just at the edge of his hearing. At first, Jeremy thought it was a problem with the connection or maybe a show Grandma was watching and paid it no mind. But the longer he talked, the closer the sound became. There was a moist scraping as the horrifying beast moved down the cables and through the phone lines towards his suburban bungalow, following the sound of his small voice. "Can you hear that, Grandma?" Jeremy had asked multiple times, but Grandma's answer was always the same. "No, sweetie, I just hear you." Jeremy's imagination ran wild as he conjured up terrifying images in his mind. A gigantic, tentacled beast moving through caves deep in the earth before venturing into the sewers and then finally discovering the phone lines. This creature was not the shapes, nor the eels. No,
Those were just servants to a larger, more powerful being. What slithered was much worse.
If money wasn't so tight.
Mother's voice suddenly flooded down the hall, causing Jeremy to snap out of the horrid memory.
Maybe I could send him to see someone else. There's a child psychiatrist downstate that...
Another one, Maggie? Do you think that they will say anything different? If Dr. Carruthers couldn't diagnose him, then who can?
If he were any other doctor, no. But...
Mother sighed.
Well, this one could be different. I looked him up in some of those research journals down at the library, and it says he helped children get over divorces, losing a parent, overcoming trauma from abuse. Everything. But he's very expensive.
Are you asking me for money, Maggie?
Mrs. Sagalily's voice was compassionate but stern.
No, Julia, I would never...
A pause, and then... I can make my own money. I could take on some overtime at the store, work till closing each night. If I did that for a month or maybe 6 weeks, I could send him to see this doctor for an appointment or two. Mrs. Sagalily slurped her tea and offered a simple, in response.
The only problem is that Jeremy's much too young to fend for himself. I have to make him dinner and put him to bed and lay out his clothes and...
You know, Mrs. Sagalily said, her voice warm, I can always look after him for a few hours a night. I did raise 3 children of my own, you know.
I wouldn't want to impose. I insist. You just leave some options for dinner in the fridge. I'll make him something, put him to bed, and wait for you to come home. I'll come over half an hour before you leave for work and help you. Anything you need.
Julia, you're too kind.
If taking care of the boy for a few hours a week will help you afford to get him some help, real help, then it's the least I can do.
She slurped her tea.
And if this doctor is as good as you claim he is, then it's worth looking into.
She paused, and it sounded as if Mother had hugged her. A moment passed before she continued.
Besides, maybe having someone new to talk to about the divorce will help him cope. Maybe he'll open up to me.
Mrs. Sagalily had always been nice enough to Jeremy, so when he was told officially by Mother that she would be taking care of him for a few hours a night, he wasn't concerned. On the first night, Mrs. Sagalily made a simple dinner and let him watch his regular cartoons. She stayed quiet and read a tattered old paperback book that she brought from home while she rocked in the big rocking chair in the corner. Once, Mrs. Sagalily attempted to talk to Jeremy about the previous school year, and when that failed to gain any traction, she switched up the conversation to his mom. The moment she accidentally brought up Jeremy's father, he ceased answering questions and turned his attention back to the episode of the Roadrunner show that was playing. The phone rang at 10 to 8, shortly before Jeremy's bedtime. The boy shot up from the rug and stared at the wall-mounted phone. Its cord swung, waving at him with each ring. The eggshell hue was ghostly and sinister to Jeremy's young eyes and eager imagination. Mrs. Sagalily folded the page in her book and headed over to the kitchen. Her stubby heels clicked across the tile as Jeremy looked on helplessly.
It won't attack her, Jeremy thought. It only wants me. Only I could hear it.
All the same, Jeremy's eyes were glued to the ringing nightmare as Mrs. Sagalily picked it up from the receiver. As she offered a curious greeting to whoever awaited on the other end, Jeremy envisioned slithering appendages moving out of the wires and thumping to the floor in wet, slimy, bubbling.
"It's your mom,"
Mrs. Sagalily said with a cozy smile as she covered the bottom speaker with her palm. Jeremy simply stared at her, his mouth agape.
That's how it'll get me. It'll use my mommy to lure me to the phone,
Jeremy thought. He imagined the creature stretching its spindly tentacles across the country, using every phone line to search for him.
Oh, yes, things are going well. He ate all his dinner and he's watching his shows,
Mrs. Sagalily said, twirling the wire around her finger.
He's staying quiet.
Uh-huh.
No problems.
If I look away, they'll come and get me. It won't matter if adults don't hear. It will come. It knows I know about them.
Jeremy felt his body begin to shake with nervousness.
Mrs. Sagalily turned her head and looked at the small boy on the carpet. Do you want to talk to your mom now, Jeremy?
He shook his head aggressively back and forth. No. He wanted to talk to his mom. Of course he did. More than anything else in the world. To hug her and be showered in kisses. But the phone, the slithering, it stood between them.
Why can't anyone hear them? Jeremy thought. Why does no one believe me?
Mrs. Sagalily frowned as she bit her lip and said,
Sorry, Maggie, he says no.
She turned away as she continued, adding a quick nod in reply to something Mother had said.
Yes, I think so. He's been staring at it the entire time I've been chatting with you.
She was whispering, but Jeremy's young ears picked up every word. Mrs. Sagalily nodded again and added a few vague sounds of agreement to the conversation for good measure, before saying,
Well, maybe we'll try again tomorrow.
She paused and looked at Jeremy, who had begun to rock back and forth in place.
I'll talk to him about it. I'm not imagining it, Jeremy thought as he kicked over a group of army men that lay in a flanking formation around his room.
The green army suffered the most casualties from his devastating attack, while the gray troopers watched in stoic postures from their mountain positions upon his dresser. Over the previous few days, both Mrs. Sagalily and Mother had talked to him at length about his phobia of the phone. He hadn't known the word phobia until 2 days ago, but now it seemed to pop up in every conversation, following him around relentlessly. Jeremy pushed up against his bedroom door and slid down until he was on the carpet. He thought back to the day before when his mother was dressing him in his raincoat.
Why don't you believe me?
Jeremy had shouted at her as she held the coat up for him to put an arm into the sleeve.
Oh, honey, I do. The shapes in the walls,
she replied as she looked out the living room window. The rain was beating down the glass.
I wish it were nicer, but we have to go shopping, she mumbled to herself. They aren't in the walls. They're in the corners. But those are gone now, and I haven't seen the eels either. They ran away because of the thing in the phone.
I know they have, sweetie, Mother said while zipping up Jeremy's blue raincoat.
Then why do you and Mrs. Sagalily talk about me? Why do I hear you talking to my next year teacher, telling her to put notes in my agenda when I'm bad? I'm not bad. I won't be bad. I just was scared because of the shapes and the eels.
Mother frowned as she grabbed his rain boots and put them on the hardwood floor. She adjusted her sandy blonde hair as she spoke. Jeremy had noticed this nervous tick his mother possessed whenever she was uncomfortable.
Honey, let's just say that I can't see them because I'm an adult. Children, well,
she paused, attempting to think of the right words to use.
Kids have magic in them, and when you turn into an adult, you'll lose it. That's why some children have imaginary friends. Well, you have these shapes. That's what you see. But remember, they can't hurt you. Not at all. Why do I get stuck with the scary things while others get friends in their imagination?
Mother assisted him as he slipped into his boots.
Well, how come? I'm not sure, honey, but it's okay because they are imaginary and they can't hurt you. Even the scary ones?
Jeremy said in a tiny voice as he looked into his mother's deep green eyes. Especially the scary ones. They just look tough, but really, they know they're nothing, nothing at all, and that scares them.
Once I become big, I won't see them?
Bingo, my handsome boy, Mother said, kissing Jeremy's forehead.
Then I want to be big now,
Jeremy shouted, stomping his feet in the hallway. Mother shook her head and stood up from her crouched position.
Oh, sweetie, no you don't.
She had a look of tiredness in her eyes, like the whole world had been pressing down on her. Jeremy didn't remember the rest of the conversation. He just knew that his mother hugged him before they headed to the store together. Jeremy stood from the carpet and cleared his mind of the memory. He knelt down and picked up the little green soldiers that he had kicked during his temper tantrum. The sergeant of the fire team was thankful that all his squad was accounted for with no casualties. Jeremy had just finished moving a column of gray tanks to the front when there was a knock on the door. Mrs. Sagalily opened it.
May I come in?
Her voice was soft. Jeremy nodded. She took two steps forward and surveyed the advancing green armed forces.
Quite a few army men you've got there.
Jeremy shrugged as he moved a lieutenant behind a shoebox that served as a war-torn building.
Can I sit? I promise I won't disturb the German guys.
Jeremy nodded before looking up and replying,
They're the Grey Army. They aren't Germans.
Oh, Mrs. Sagalily said in a surprised manner.
My little Ricky always played Allies versus Germans when he was a boy, 25 odd years ago.
She looked into the distant past for a moment before adding, The green guys always won. Julia Sagalily moved over to the bed and sat down on the edge. A gray trooper holding onto a submachine gun toppled over, but she stood him upright before the boy could notice. She was deeply concerned for little Jeremy.
Here he is, a normal 7-year-old boy playing with his army men,
Julia thought as she watched him line up a group of soldiers. Her memories took her back to her own children, long since grown up and moved away.
Yet something dark lurks inside him. Those shapes, or snakes, or centipedes, or whatever apparitions he claims to see.
She looked out the window as the sun began to set behind the trees.
And then there's that nasty business with the phone, his aversion to it, and the sounds, the slithering, as he described it. How he ever heard that word in the first place is a mystery, yet that's what the boy had said. Slithering.
As she watched Jeremy shuffle the tank column around, Julia thought back to when she was just a little girl and had an imaginary friend herself, Kristen. Except Kristen never really talked much, and Julia knew she wasn't real. It was just something she made up to keep her company while she hosted tea parties for her dollies and held theater for her teddy bear collection.
But Jeremy clearly thinks these visions are real, and he claims they're dangerous, Julia thought to herself. Could the boy be schizophrenic? No, he's too young for that. But then again, every single one of those poor people was young once.
She continued to watch the back of Jeremy's head as he added a fresh set of soldiers to the fray. The boy stopped playing and looked up as Mrs. Sagalily cleared her throat.
Jeremy, I came in here because I wanted to say sorry, she said with a calm tone. I should have chosen my words more carefully. I know they are real to you. I'm sorry for saying otherwise. But I think I know how to make them go away.
Jeremy put down the sandbag wall in his hand and looked at her with intense interest.
He wanted nothing more than for the thing in the phone lines to slither off back to the dark crevice it had come out of.
How? He asked after a cautious moment.
Have you and your mom talked about ignoring them altogether?
Jeremy squinted as he thought back to all the talks he and his mother had had over the last year. She had mentioned many times about them being not real, but ignoring them? He hadn't thought about that before.
Ignore them? He asked, his voice quiet and full of wonder. Yeah, have you tried that?
She said, her tone soft and filled with kindness. Jeremy shook his head, and Mrs. Sagalily continued.
Just ignore them and they'll go away. Like a bully. I promise. You think so?
Jeremy asked. A look of hopeful wonder filled his face.
Yes, just ignore them, sweetie, she said, and Julia Sagalily believed every word.
She smiled and added, Let's see what I can make you for dinner. She leaned forward and rubbed Jeremy's shaggy brown hair before standing up. She looked down at the child, watching him for a moment before turning and heading towards the kitchen.
He will turn out just fine, she thought as she rounded the corner. They aren't real.
Jeremy heard Mrs. Sagalily's footsteps move away from his room and enter the kitchen.
Just ignore them.
The voice in Jeremy's mind echoed her kind words.
Just ignore them and they'll go away, like a bully.
Jeremy felt a smile move across his face as he held on to his favorite green army man. He had a plan now. Ignoring them.
Then no more doctors, no more pills, no more mommy crying.
That last part was what he wanted more than anything. Jeremy shifted his weight to his knees as he heard a shattering sound come from the kitchen. He listened for a moment but heard no oops or sorry, like Mother always said whenever she dropped something. The kitchen stayed silent, and Mrs. Sagalily said nothing. Jeremy stood up and felt a rush of concern rise up, prompted by the lack of noise that followed. No sounds of cleanup or muttering, just a stone silence that reverberated through the house. Jeremy exited his room and walked down the hall, wondering to himself what had broken. He turned the corner and noticed a porcelain bowl smashed against the tile. Hundreds of white fragments had been launched in all directions. He looked up and saw Mrs. Sagalily leaning against the counter, clutching her chest. Her eyes met Jeremy's, her pupils only a pinprick as pain shot through her body.
I think I'm having a heart attack, she called out, her voice almost a whisper.
She clenched her jaw and grabbed at her blouse before saying,
Get the phone. Call. I need it. Call.
Her words slurred. Jeremy's eyes widened.
The phone,
he thought as he glanced at the off-white menace before quickly directing his gaze back to Mrs. Sagalily. He didn't know what a heart attack was, but he knew she was in pain. He knew he needed to help her.
But the phone, she said to use the phone, he thought as time moved at a glacial pace.
Julia felt the icy pain shoot along her torso and down her arms.
Where is this coming from?
She thought as the agony coursed through her. All her weight was placed on the counter. She stared at the boy, her voice fleeting, unable to speak further.
I asked him to use the phone, she realized. He's probably terrified, but I need an ambulance.
Jeremy stood still, grinding his teeth.
I can't do it, he heard himself say as he stared into Mrs. Sagalily's minuscule pupils.
She opened her mouth to speak, but nothing came out except for a squeak.
Just ignore them, Jeremy's voice whispered to him.
But I can't, he thought in reply.
They'll get me.
Not if you ignore them. Like a bully, they'll leave you alone.
But what if they don't?
Jeremy's inner voice shifted to that of his mother's.
You have to be a big boy now. Call 911, just like we practiced. Help her, Jeremy.
Julia Sagalily felt her world begin to spin faster and her grip loosened on the counter.
He's shaking, she thought as she attempted to focus on the child in front of her.
She could see it in his face, how much he was struggling with the request to use the phone. Just before she lost consciousness, Julia Sagalily saw the boy take a step towards the phone.
That's it, she thought with a glow of pride.
That was her last thought before she crumpled to the floor. Jeremy had never seen an adult fall like that. He yelled in surprise and ran to the phone.
You're doing it,
his mother's voice called out from somewhere in his subconscious. He put the phone to his ear and heard the sound of the dial tone.
See? Nothing there. Now push the buttons before it's too late.
He watched as he moved his finger to the pad and pressed 9. The beast stirred. Its writhing echoed down the wires as it awoke from its slumber.
Hang up now before it gets you, his inner voice yelled.
No, Jeremy, don't. You need to help her, Mother's voice cried out. He pressed the 1 next. The tendrils unraveled in sickly chaos as they moved down the wires with haste.
It's coming! It's coming!
He pressed the 1 again, and the twisting tentacles were nearly on top of him, their ghastly screaming thundering in his eardrum.
Hang up, Jeremy! Hang up!
His consciousness screamed.
No, I won't let it win, he thought,
as his inner voice joined with his mother's. He was filled with a calm confidence.
It isn't real. Just ignore it, like a bully.
The dial tone switched to a ringing as the call was sent out, traveling down the wires and away from the house.
See? Nothing to worry about. It isn't real. It isn't...
Lumpy, drooling tentacles sprang forth from the phone, wrapping Jeremy in a suffocating embrace. The boy went to scream, but what filled his lungs was not air. Emergency services. Do you require police, fire, or ambulance? The voice on the other end of the wire asked. Hello? Hello?
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
That was What Slithers in the Wires by Robert J. Bradshaw. Robert J. Bradshaw was born and raised in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. He relocated to British Columbia, seeking adventure. He currently lives in the Fraser Valley region. Nebulous Seas is Bradshaw's fifth release to date. His other works include the anthologies Songs of the Abyss, 2020, Shadows at Midnight, 2021, and A Stone's Throw Away from Paradise, 2023. His debut novel, A Monarch Among Kings, a science fiction colonization epic, was released in 2022. Bradshaw is currently hard at work on his sophomore novel, as well as another gathering of tales. Now, I fully expect some of you to start making baseless, toxic claims that I might have promised that nothing bad would happen to these characters. Some might even purport to have audio proof of me saying that. To these people, these mudslingers, these denigrators, these character assassins, I say this. Yeah, you're totally right. These characters got fucked over. But hey, it was pretty entertaining, wasn't it? And we have Robert J. Bradshaw to thank for that. As always, I'll be returning next week to give you your weekly dose of crawling chaos. Until then, maybe stay away from telephones and treatment plants, yeah? And most importantly, don't forget to stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.